43% down to zero, the success rate of memory poisoning attacks on agent systems already in production today. This is The Wire from AI Expert, Edition 12. The weak agent memory became the new attack surface, and the hardware sustaining these systems became unaffordable. MemAudit was published on Archive on May 22nd and frames agent memory as a forensic problem, not just a security problem. The distinction is operational. Existing defenses operate on what the agent produces, prompt filters, output blockers. But the attack happens before that. An adversarial user injects malicious records into the agent's shared memory during completely normal interaction. When another user arrives with a legitimate query, the agent retrieves the poisoned record and acts on it in someone else's session. The vector tested is Minja, query-only injection attack, with no direct access to the memory database, just normal interaction with the agent, the way any user would. The numbers. Before MemAudit, 70% success rate on QA attacks. On RAP attacks, reasoning agent poisoning, 83.3%. After MemAudit, 0% on both. Complete elimination on both tested vectors. The framework combines two signals. First, a counterfactual influence score masks each memory record individually and measures the change in the agent's output, direct causal attribution. Second, a consistency graph that flags records structurally anomalous within the memory database as a whole. The cost the paper didn't quantify, overhead of counterfactual reinference at scale. Each audit has to rerun across every record in the database. In production with memory growing continuously, that has a cost. But the relevant question isn't whether it's cheap. It's whether you have post-incident memory forensics today or you don't. L. Seagard from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and IBM Research opens a different vector, and a quieter one. Frameworks like CAML and AutoGen traditionally pass natural language between agents. Each step decodes, tokenizes, and reconstructs semantic state. It's slow and loses information. More recent work passes KV caches directly between agents to cut that latency and preserve richer semantic structure. And that's where the problem emerges. KV caches encode contextual inputs, intermediate reasoning states, agent-specific information. An adversary with access to shared cache artifacts via compromised downstream agent, logging infrastructure, or auxiliary model can train a decoder to reconstruct the upstream agent's inputs directly from the representation, with no textual disclosure at all. The attack is invisible in outputs. Existing security mechanisms don't see this channel. They operate on generated outputs or tool actions. What transits in latent representations is outside the scope of any conventional defense. That's the central point of the paper. L. Seagard defends with adversarial training. One model learns to reconstruct sensitive inputs from the transmitted cache artifacts. Simultaneously, L. Seagard learns a transformation at the representation level that minimizes what the adversary can recover, preserving semantics useful for downstream agents. The framework covers the three primary topologies: sequential, hierarchical, and graph-based, and is model agnostic. The specific numbers, reconstruction error deltas, task accuracy, latency overhead, were not disclosed. It's pure research. Threat formalization, mitigation blueprint, directional results. No evidence of production deployment yet. But if you're designing a latent communication layer via KV sharing, isolation at the representation level needs to be first-class requirement, not a retrofit after the incident. That same week, a developer named Fabio Akita documented with surgical precision why the most popular agent memory system on the market didn't work in production. Agent memory has 15,700 stars on GitHub. Akita was 7 days in production, opened 5 reproducible bug reports, and scrapped the entire project. The bugs are structural, not configuration. Above 10,000 observations, the BM25 index collapses to around 96 bytes on restart and costs 5 minutes of rebuild every time. Every write goes through a 5-second debounce on index persistence. When upstream state.set times out at 30 seconds, the node process dies, taking everything in RAM with it, guaranteed data loss window on every timeout. The quietest of the five, the hood for Claude Code read data.tool output, but Claude Code emits tool response. For 6 weeks, approximately 47% of all tool calls disappeared with no warning. The system seemed to work. It wasn't. Akita's answer was AI memory. SQLite FTS5 for indexing, raw markdown committed to get for storage, single binary with no external dependencies. The design comes directly from Andre Kripathi's Just on LLM wiki. The core problem it solves is handoff between agents. Without shared external memory, each agent swap requires a manual write and read cycle of handoff.md. None of the session compaction systems, Claude Code, Codex, OpenCode, survives crossing agent boundaries. The AI memory bet is explicit. Complexity in layers is the enemy of reliability before you hit scale. FTS5 and local SQLite beats a distributed system full of bugs in production today. Moving off memory, Cloudflare completed its platform stack for agents with a browser run rebuild and 6 name layers. The central number, 4x more concurrency in browser run, 120 simultaneous browsers per pool versus 30 before, 50% faster on quick actions. The migration was to dedicated containers with regional pools of pre-warmed Chromium instances. The diagnosis is straightforward. Infrastructure optimized for long, stable human sessions collides with the pattern of agent requests, short, sporadic, and spikes. The architectural pattern worth extracting, state management moved out of workers KV, eventual consistency causing race conditions during concurrent runs, to D1 with queues, enabling transactional browser assignment. Batch writes support up to 500,000 containers per location. If you run concurrent agents against any store with eventual consistency and see race conditions and resource assignment, transactional queue at the data layer resolves cleaner than locking at the application layer. That's the direct pattern to steal from here. The complete stack has 6 layers, compute in 2 tiers, workers V8 isolates for light tasks, sandboxes GA for full Linux with Git and Bash, orchestration with dynamic workflows in around 300 lines MIT, memory and private beta with search across 5 parallel channels and reciprocal rank fusion, browser running containers with WebGL and WebMCP support, and a commerce protocol co-developed with Stripe, where agents create accounts, domains, and initiate subscriptions autonomously. Standard ceiling of $100 per month per provider. That ceiling needs explicit attention. It's a guardrail, not a control policy. Agents at scale generating unexpected billing events will blow past it before you notice. You're going to need additional controls beyond the default for this to actually go into production. Hardware. Morgan Stanley estimated that a Vera Rubin VR20 NVL72 rack will cost hyperscalers around $7.8 million. Memory is $2 million of that total, 25% of system cost. A 435% increase versus memory cost on the GB300 NVL72. For comparison, Rubin GPUs cost $55,000 each, Vera CPUs $5,000. 72 Rubin GPUs per rack is $3.96 million, the single largest line item. Memory is the second largest cost factor, and rising faster than compute. Two drivers explain the increase. The Vera Rubin VR20 NVL72 carries 54 terabytes of LPDDR5 versus 17 terabytes on the GB200 NVL72, 3 times the capacity. SemiAnalysis estimates NVIDIA paid $8 per gigabyte of LPDDR5 in Q1 2026. If price rises to $10 per gigabyte, LPDDR5 alone reaches $540,000 per rack. The second driver is entirely new, around $1 million in 3D NAND storage per rack, a category that was essentially zero on the GB200 NVL72. The inversion is structural. In earlier generations, memory was a secondary line item in bill of materials. On Vera Rubin, memory and all its forms dominates the cost curve. For anyone budgeting a cluster today, you will spend more on memory than on compute. Efficient memory design, quantization that reduces activation pressure, careful evaluation of NAND and inference pipelines, these become direct cost levers on a $7.8 million capital decision. To close, Anthropic's secondary stock market entered speculative currency with structural characteristics of fraud. $1 trillion in capital chasing 30 to 50 billion in available shares. Anthropic, valued publicly at $380 billion the last time, is raising at a reported valuation of $900 billion, while simultaneously pursuing a round of up to $50 billion. In April, Anthropic made a 48-hour call for investor allocations. Clara Vidyanov, ex-head of investments at Hive, secondary market practitioner since 2018, now co-founding a new fund with Harry Raghavan, said she'd never seen a company make a public request structured that way. "This is the first time I saw a company say, we are accepting proposals to invest in us because we're such a hot ticket that we can choose the capital we want." The infrastructure of the problem. SPVs are unregulated. Multiple brokers market the same share block simultaneously. In structures with 4 or more layers of SPV, whether the Anthropic shares actually exist at the base remains unresolved until close. Synthetic contracts circulate too. Some investors buy price exposure, not equity. The documented fees in one structure, 20% flat fee once, plus 2% annually in administration, totaling over 30% carry in layers. At 5 years hold, just the 2% annual alone reaches 10% before carry touches anything. For a family office allocating $50 to $100 million, that fee load can consume a third of nominal return before the underlying asset performs. Anthropic published a list of unauthorized brokers and an explicit warning banning SPVs. The list has been updated both directions, names added and removed, including Forge and Lionheart Ventures. The DOJ has begun prosecuting cases in pre-IPO private markets, but enforcement lags far behind deal velocity in an unregulated environment. Any deal with more than 2 layers of SPV needs direct audit of chain of custody to the cap table. Without it, it's exposure without backing. Agent memory was exposed long before anyone published a paper about it, and will stay exposed in every system that doesn't yet have post-incident forensics. Wire in the next edition. Until then.